I'm Matt Egan, Director of Federal Affairs at States Trust, the federal project of the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Here with us today is Congressman August Pfluger, representing the great state of Texas' 11th Congressional District. He's one of the great conservative leaders on energy reform, chairing the House's HEAT Task Force, or House Energy Action Team. We're really glad to have him here with us today to discuss electric vehicles.
Matt, thanks for having me, and thanks for what TPPF does. I mean, you guys are instrumental in pushing good education and narratives and really helping with the overall push against some of these bad ideas that I know we'll talk about today.
Well, I think there's too many to talk about in just a quick half hour, but we'll get through as many as we can, and thank you for that. So to start off, and we know in 2021, $22 billion in subsidies were distributed to EV manufacturers as well as the EV owners. That equates to nearly $50,000 per electric vehicle. How did Joe Biden do this?
Let's rewind the clock a little bit and let's just kind of set the stage for what 21 and 22 were. New president, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. You had the cabal of lack of transparency, rushing thousands of pages of bills to the floor, not going through committee, not having a debate on any of this. And, oh, by the way, spending $7.5 trillion. And they had many social agendas. This is egregious because when you look at the IIJA, when you look at the IRA, and I'm not even going to tell you what they called those bills because they're flat out lies and they're not helping our economy. In fact, they've led to inflation. This has led to inflation. But there were massive green subsidies in each of these bills, specifically in those two, that allowed these electric vehicles to be propped up artificially. Because when you look at the demand in our country, it's not there. You know, it's just not reasonable. I know we'll talk about some of those issues, but this we're talking about thousands of dollars per electric vehicle just to make them somewhat competitive, and not for middle class Americans, but for those who are wealthy, those who have additional funds. And by the way, in those garages where those electric vehicles are, in almost all cases, there's also a normal an internal combustion engine car. So the way it was possible was rushing it to the floor, passing non-transparent bills, trillions of dollars in subsidies, and acting like there was this, you know, major demand and this major benefit to the climate, which I completely disagree with. It's not there, that existed. And I think manufacturers are looking at this going, oh my gosh, we're in real trouble if we continue down this path.
And they did this without a single Republican vote with both bills, correct?
That's exactly right. Not a single Republican bill. And then they come back and they say, well, we talked to the manufacturers, we talked to industry, we dealt with everyone across America. That's not true. They didn't. They had one agenda, and that was to kill fossil fuels. And they thought that by doing some sort of mandate, by propping up electric vehicles, that they would be able to do that. And we know the real story.
Well, Americans need to understand every time they see one of those EVs on the road, that is $50,000 in their taxes on top of what the owner is paying to the dealer when they purchase the car.
Their model is take from all Americans so that a few can benefit. Mm-hmm. Look, I personally don't have anything against an electric vehicle. If you want to put it on the market, put it on the market. Let it compete. If that's the choice that you want to make, and I know some people just like electric vehicles, that is fine. Mm-hmm. They should have that choice. What I do have a problem with is you and me, Matt, mm-hmm. paying for other people to buy that electric vehicle, subsidizing other people's choices when it's not. You tell me one rancher in the district that I serve, one farmer in the district that I represent, that thinks electric vehicles are a good idea for their business. I can't find a single one.
No, sir. And that's why they don't seem to be growing in rural areas, certainly for one reason. Another issue is the Department of Energy just renewed a multiplier that gives EVs nearly seven times more credits than they should receive based on their EPA-rated fuel economy. This multiplier adds $15,000 in subsidies as well to EVs. How can Republicans fix this fuel economy standard and prevent this kind of abuse from a president and unknown nameless bureaucrats?
We're working very hard using CRA process, the Congressional Review Act, and that basically pushes back on these executive orders that the president is doing without the consent of Congress. We're the ones, Congress, the legislative branch, are the ones that have the power of the purse. We all know that the White House has abused that time and time again. This is a perfect example. Seven times. You have to kind of read that again because it's mm-hmm. like the the credits that they're receiving for being quote unquote environmentally friendly or having better fuel standards, it's false. It's all smoke and mirrors. And we have to be clear-eyed about what they're doing. They are propping it up through every tool. And I look at it kind of a weaponization and overreach of government that doesn't make sense. The math doesn't add up. And so those credits shouldn't be given in that way. The math doesn't work. We are going to use every legislative tool we have, including that CRA, to reverse these bad policies. And we can only hope that we get a Republican Donald Trump in office in next year in 25, elected here in this November, that we can get back to reality and not have these artificial propped up subsidies that aren't fair and transparent to the rest of Americans.
I'm not sure the American people can handle four more years of nameless bureaucrats writing rules that drastically change everyday Americans' lives and their ability to honestly just get from point A to point B. It's ludicrous.
You're right. We can't survive four more years of this. This is what I love about TPPF is you come to the table with facts and you present the facts in a way that lawmakers can look at. You help educate on things like EVs so that even Democrats can look at it and say, you know what, maybe I'm a Democrat in Michigan that has a car manufacturer. And these folks are looking at these issues going, wow, they have an interest in making sure that those manufacturers survive. Mm-hmm. And when you look at something that's as egregious as this and the math that they've done, it's not in the interest of our economy. It's not in the interest of our national security needs. It certainly is not in the interest of those manufacturers.
Yes, even with President Biden still in office, manufacturers are already starting to turn away from this agenda that he's trying to force down their throats. And we're seeing that because nobody's buying these cars.
You're right. I mean, how many of these vehicles are sitting on lots and they're trying to clear them out? I heard a story yesterday about somebody going to on a trip. They were going to rent a car and the only thing they had was an EV. And they said, no, we're not going to take an EV because we don't know where the charging stations are. Mm-hmm. You know, it's actually a safety issue. Can you imagine a young family with young kids stranded on the road because they can't find a charging station? I mean, they haven't thought these things through. What about a hurricane that happens and you're trying to get people in a massive evacuation effort out of a place like Florida? It doesn't work. You know, these are real issues we have to consider.
And it's a major problem actually for first responders as well. That's something nobody ever talks about. These batteries are borderline explosive. Once you put the fire out, they can continue to catch on fire for days after the actual accident, yeah. Not to mention the obvious ability to be electrocuted.
Matt, we actually had a hearing in Homeland Security. Not only do I sit on Energy and Commerce, but I sit on Energy and Homeland Security. And we talked about this with first responders, firemen from New York City. The threat of those batteries burning, just like you mentioned, is very real. In Llano, Texas, about a year ago, there was a road that was closed down for 12 hours because of a single car accident that involved an electric vehicle with a battery that burned. And it wreaked havoc in that part of the state of Texas on those roads because they had to close them down for fear of safety of other people that were driving by. It took them a long time to put the fire out.
See, and these are the types of stories that Americans don't hear when they're talking about these new shiny electric vehicles mm-hmm. out there. But the real-life impacts are really starting to come down. And now everyone's having to force and rethink this. But this is all part of the less anti-carbon agenda and kind of a reducing environmental impact, as they like to say. So are these EVs, do they actually have a lower environmental impact?
They don't. And one of the things... If you really care about those emissions, then look at the life cycle of the emissions, okay? It's not just the snapshot in time where that electric vehicle is driving down the road from point A to point B today. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to how it was manufactured. First, 90%+ of those critical minerals that build the batteries, that add into the batteries, nickel, copper, lithium, the other...
Cobalt,
yeah. Where are they produced? They're produced in China or from Chinese-owned mines in places like Africa using slave labor, okay? And they certainly are not using environmentally friendly techniques. They're actually using coal plants. They're burning way more emissions than we can even understand. But secondly, there's a lot of those products that don't have good emissions on the life cycle of the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And the math that they're trying to tell you, the smoke and mirrors that they're trying to say, well, they're environmentally friendly. Well, where's the electricity coming from to charge them? What about the other parts of the vehicle that come from different places around the world that are not environmentally friendly, that certainly don't respect human rights, like we've mentioned. So no, they don't. It doesn't add up. They when you look at the life cycle, not just a snapshot in time. Internal combustion engines, and what about hybrids? Okay, if you care about sustainability, well, hybrid's not a bad option for you because it's actually reasonable and it takes good technology. So these are the conversations that we're having. We've had many hearings on the Energy and Commerce Committee about EVs, and the administration just is completely out of touch with reality. And this is one example, as you mentioned.
Yes, sir. To build on what you're saying, 100% of the refined graphite that goes into electric vehicles comes from China. You cannot purchase an electric vehicle without sending your money to China. It is not possible currently on the market.
And yet, you can't mine any of the other minerals, even though we have some of them in places like Minnesota and Wyoming and other states throughout the Midwest and into the far West. We can't get a permit to mine those critical minerals. The administration mandating electric vehicles won't even let those states mine for some of the minerals that could be produced here.
And that turns into a national security issue on top of this. If we can't produce the things here with things, at least from non-adversarial countries, it becomes a massive issue the administration refuses to talk about.
Very true.
So another interesting fact there, producing 1 ton of lithium will supply about 100 EVs as far as making their batteries, but it also will use roughly 2 million tons of water in order to do that. That is 725 Olympic swimming pools worth of fresh water to produce 100 electric vehicle batteries.
I'm learning something new with this stat, but that's mind-boggling. How is that sustainable? How does that help the environment? How is that good for anybody? It's not.
No, because once again, this is just that shiny picture. This isn't at all about sustainability. This is about pleasing the green cartel and the green cult.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So again, we kind of talked about this a little bit, but we said how this is such a shiny object in the room and Americans aren't really there. They aren't taking the bait. What are some of those factors in Americans' lives that are just causing them to say, no, this doesn't work for us?
It's reality, okay? The reality is that these vehicles are artificially propped up. Without the subsidies, $50,000 worth, as you mentioned earlier, without the propping up and the mandating and government overreach, electric vehicles, the idea of electric vehicles are not new. I mean, it's over 100 years old, all the way back to the beginning of the automotive industry. But there's a reason that they haven't caught on. And it's not because they're somehow evil. It's because reality sets in and you want something that works. Electricity is a big deal in this country. The demand for electricity is only going to increase. And I think conservative estimates in the next 15 years have that demand at least increasing by 50%. Where is it going to come from? Where is that? The left's idea is that it's going to come from wind and solar. And we know for a fact that wind and solar is not reliable. I don't have anything against these types of energy. But when you count on it for dispatchable energy to power a grid that is succumbing to the pressures of mandating EVs, it's not going to work. The math doesn't work. So we need reliable sources of energy. I know that's a separate topic, but you need more natural gas plants that, like produced in my district in the Permian Basin. You need more nuclear. You need more reliable energy that is available right now. Number two, the infrastructure that's set up to even charge your vehicles does not come anywhere close to meeting the demand of a 50% mandate like the administration is suggesting. When I asked the Secretary of Energy how much electricity we would need, this is Secretary Granholm, the primary energy advisor to the president, she did not know the number. You would think you'd have that math problem worked out. Number three, think about the small businesses. Think about a plumber or anybody in the community that has a small business that uses a vehicle on a daily basis. They may travel, 100 miles. They may travel 10 miles. But they're constantly going throughout and especially in rural areas. If you work an 8 to 10 hour day and you have to take an hour to charge your vehicle, if time is money, you're losing 1/8 or 1/10 of the profitability because you're stuck, not able to do things, but rather charging your vehicle. So delivery companies, plumbers, anybody who's doing service calls. The reason that this is such an issue, Matt, is because the administration has thought through none of this, and Americans are facing the reality that they just don't meet the needs of our lives right now.
Unfortunately, it's another instance of this president giving in to a very radical base, which not only doesn't want to, refuses to even attempt to look at facts, and instead just pushes a narrative in face of everything. And all those issues you just mentioned, they are all together. They all interact together. For example, we know a fast charging station for an EV to charge a battery in 30 minutes uses the same amount of electricity as a small grocery store in that amount of time.
Wow.
That's, our grid cannot handle that. It's not built to do that. We've already seen, you talked about renewables, and I think we should talk about that. We know that they aren't reliable. We've seen it in Texas, unfortunately, with Winter Storm Uri. When things get bad, they tend to be the first thing that go down, yeah, versus coal and LNG don't stop.
That's right.
In those moments. So all these things are together.
They're all together. It's all wrapped up into this artificial fairy tale that the radical progressives have hijacked the president. They've hijacked the Democrat Party. No longer are they speaking in realistic terms. And that's been our mission the last 4 years, is to push back on these ideas, because this is such a national security issue. Look at Germany. That's a perfect example of a country that used to be top in manufacturing. Vehicles, building materials, you know, they high-end things with the engineers, they could also produce them. People are bailing out on Germany right now because electricity is too expensive. They can't afford it. And the reason it's too expensive is because they have refused to use reliable forms of energy in favor of unreliable forms of energy. Matt, well, let me add one thing. I no longer use the term all of the above when it comes to energy. I use the term best of the above. There is a place for wind and solar. I believe that it can add to the grid, but it is not baseload capable. Mm-hmm. And it is not, in most areas, it's actually not best of the above. It's just part of it propped up by government subsidies. Let the forms of energy compete equally. Let them do what they should do, which is provide low cost, reliable energy to Americans so that we can keep manufacturing, so that we can do things here. If we really believe in America, energy is the foundation.
100%. Energy security is national security, I believe is a phrase I've heard you use before,
I know,
sir.
Yes.
And it's 100% true. And with what you just said regarding the subsidies, let's take a second and kind of dig into that for, mm-hmm, because it's very similar to what we talked about with the subsidies for EVs when it comes to wind and solar. Investors are going into wind and solar knowing that it won't produce and it's not reliable, but because they know that they will profit off of the government subsidies. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, if you look at the beginning of 21, the end of the Trump administration, they had a lot of these subsidies for wind and solar sunsetting, which I think was the right thing to, you know, okay, they've gotten off the ground. We can debate whether or not it was right to put those in there. I think you know where I stand. But they were going to sunset and let them compete. And that's the right way to do it, because the market will drive the outcome, the answer. Consumers, manufacturers, the American public, the demand for these products, the demand for electricity will drive the right outcome. But instead, back to Nancy Pelosi, back to these bills that we all know had a radical green agenda, they actually increased the subsidies. And so people are having to make a choice. But normal businesses that probably don't believe that these types of energy produce what they need are looking at it and they're saying, well, there's money available, so if I don't take it, then I'm hurting my company. That's what's happening. At the expense of building natural gas plants, at the expense of building realistic sources of energy. So we're going to end up in a situation, if we keep on this path, where we don't have reliable energy because the government has forced the hand of many businesses to look elsewhere and to do non-reliable forms in favor of those that are more reliable.
Yes, and we're already seeing these consequences. We're purposefully, it seems, the left and the media aren't connecting the dots between rolling blackouts in the summer in California and your ability to not, them saying, don't charge your car, please, or you're not going to have air conditioning or power in your house. And that all comes back to, again, they're too reliant on and baseloading these solar and wind instead of natural gas, coal, and these other things, which we produce cleaner here in the United States than anywhere else in the world.
Isn't it amazing that in California, Gavin Newsom is forcing the issue with EVs? I mean, California is the leading actor in bad ideas, and they're forcing these mandates. But yet at night, as you mentioned, because the grid can't handle it, well, hold on, please don't plug your car in tonight, because if you do, we're literally going to have a blackout, a rolling blackout.
You may not be able to get to work tomorrow because we won't have power this evening. Yeah. And again, these are all parts of that bigger picture. You mentioned the Secretary of Energy just not having these answers. They're not even looking into it. It's like they don't want to look into the secondary effects. It's just do this. We will deal with the consequences later, which is no way for an administration to govern.
It is the antithesis of America. I believe the greatest strength that we have are Americans who innovate and who come up with good ideas that can that help our economy, that help our national security. Nowhere is this more true than it is in energy. And maybe there's a day where we get to a battery that can last for 12 hours. But let's innovate that here with critical minerals from America inside our own borders and not from China. But in the meantime, we are blessed with resources right under our feet. Places like the Permian Basin where we really, really hurt our national security if we don't use those resources. And at the heart of the issue is a conservation effort. I invite everybody to come to West Texas because the one thing that we don't have a lot of is rain out there. And so everyone takes care of the land. We all want clean air, clean water. We want the land to be left better for the next generation. If you want to see a real conservationist, come meet the farmers and the ranchers that live in West Texas, where we also produce energy, and meet them and understand what they're doing for the environment, because that's the real effort.
I'll be sure to pass along that invitation to our friends on the left for you.
Thank you.
Well, sir, you made an interesting point there, and you talked about, you know, letting the market compete. But I would say, you know, Joe Biden's putting his thumb on the scale of the market, though, but it's more like a cinder block on the scale. And that's going to stop all of that innovation you just talked about for a potential EV that could work in the future. Because why would they innovate if they have what they have right now and it's working for them?
And it's propped up by government subsidies. That stops innovation. I don't believe that the administration wants the innovation. Mm-hmm. They're acting like we're in this transition that, you know, if the transition is a 400 meter track that we're 300 meters, 375 meters through with this race, we haven't even gotten out of the starting blocks. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in an energy expansion and we need all forms of energy to work. And that's where the real innovation needs to happen. I don't believe that the transition is anywhere close to what they are claiming it is. And, you know, like it or not, the administration is coming to grips with the fact that fossil fuels play the most important role in our energy expansion.
Well, sir, you and I both know reliable, affordable energy is one of the keys to escaping poverty, not just in this country, but globally. And as they make energy more expensive here in the country, we are going to see that really hurt low-income Americans the most. And the administration is just now coming to terms with that. And some of their actions recently, like the LNG export ban, which you have been one of the leading voices in fighting, they're now starting to see those consequences and how bad it's hurting Americans.
This is a narrative that the left will tell you that the climate injustice has killed millions of people, when in reality, Texas Public Policy Foundation and the life-powered initiative that you have has set the record straight. And that these fossil fuels produced in places like Midland and Odessa, Texas, and in South Texas and all throughout the rest of the U.S. have actually increased the quality of life, have increased the life expectancy rates throughout the world more than any other thing, any other single thing. And so I really appreciate what TPPF does on that. But when the president said that they were going to stop exporting, they're going to put a pause on the exports of LNG, what he really told the rest of the world was, we're not going to produce it here and you can't count on us. And if you're a partner or an ally, you can't count on us to help you because we know energy security is national security. Mm-hmm. So I really believe, and we're putting a tremendous amount of pressure, this was a really bad decision for the administration because Americans are hurting. Groceries are more expensive. Electric bills are more expensive. Everything is more expensive. Bidenflation has hurt every American. And they look at that as the exact opposite policy of what they should be doing.
And Joe Biden seems to think Bidenflation is so great, we should just export it. And that's really what this LNG ban really comes down to.
We're leading the way on this. I have legislation that would reverse that policy. Mm-hmm. We're pushing Speaker Johnson really hard to put this in front of the president, to let the American public know that the president's going to have to make a decision. He's either going to face reality and make a good decision on affordable, reliable energy and on getting American LNG to our partners and allies, or The other choice is that he's handing Putin and he's handing Iran and he's handing other bad actors around the world a huge win, because LNG is still going to be produced. It's just a matter of where. And we do it cleaner, we do it more efficiently, and we should be doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and once again, if the left really cared about a cleaner environment, they would want us to do it here, where we do it better than everybody else in the world, exponentially, not just by a small margin.
You're absolutely right. And I recently traveled to do a trip on counterterrorism to understand where some of our partners and even allies, countries like Turkey, are in the fight against terrorism. One of the things that we also did was we talked about the national security needs of energy. And in Turkey, in a place like Turkey, where they are at the crossroads of the East and the West, and, you know, with all the terrorism issues to their south in places like Syria and Iraq and Iran, they're at the crossroads of it. Their main concern is making sure that they have enough energy in their country. And their main request was, please send us more LNG. We want American LNG. That's how important it is to countries around the world.
Well, someone should tell the man at 1600 Penn. Maybe he'll change his mind, but either way, your voice and our voice will be not just pleading, we'll be banging down the door that he needs to put American energy first, to put America first in this country, on the globe, excuse me. So now I'm going to bring it back a little bit more to what we originally came to talk about today. So we talked about how Biden hasn't been successful in getting Americans to take the bait on EVs. So kind of looking at that, the impact on the electrical grid, these vehicles need a whole lot of power. We're not getting that from the places that we would like to. And then we're not going to get it in general. We talked about California. What is the administration's response going to be? We mentioned Secretary Granholm has no response. Mm-hmm. So are we just going to sit here and twiddle our thumbs on this?
This is why a Republican majority in the House is so important, because not only do we have hearings and we get the facts out there, but we also have legislation to push back. Number one, to not allow the administration to do an EV mandate, mm-hmm. because it's unrealistic on so many different levels. But number two, to also enhance our ability to permit new natural gas lines and new ways to get those products to the markets that Americans deserve and demand, because the process is so long, it's so onerous. So we are acting, and I'm very proud that in this 118th Congress, that HR 1, the number one priority of this conference, of our Congress of Republicans, was energy security. I led on this, I authored many pieces and parts of this, but we're pushing back on the administration because we see this as a fundamental issue for our national security. But the grid reliability, the amount of electricity, how the grid functions, does it have the right sources? Every single expert in this country, every single person who is in charge of distributing electricity will tell you that the biggest threat we have to our grid is the sourcing of unreliable energy.
Mm-hmm. And going back to HR1 real fast, that bill passed with bipartisan support out of the House, including from the Texas delegation, because we understand that issue in Texas. But Chuck Schumer won't even bring it up to the floor in the Senate, and it was passed well over a year ago now.
He will not, but yet we've still been successful. We have still had pieces of that legislation signed into law. Mm-hmm. Let's just back up to 21. Remember Nancy Pelosi's HR1 was federalizing elections, was running Texas elections out of Washington, D.C. with Nancy Pelosi in charge. That's how different the two parties are. Republicans see energy security as national security. No, he will not bring it up on the floor, Chuck Schumer, but we still have been able to include, and we are pushing for more inclusion of the pieces and parts of that legislation to be passed. And I think with a White House, a Democrat White House and a Democrat Senate, we've gotten about as much as you can get done realistically. Now we need to get back to all three, and that's why we're looking forward to 25 to be able to do that.
Well, that would be the best thing for Americans, and not just American pocketbooks, but for the entire nation and its growth. Sir, we really appreciate you joining us here today for a discussion on what is a really important topic that's not getting enough attention, and we know you're going to keep fighting, and we're going to be right there by your side to do that.
Well, thank you. TPBF does a great job. All Texans should be proud of it, but all Americans should be proud of it, because Texas is such a large part of the energy story, and will continue to do that. And people like myself and others are going to continue to champion this issue, because it's so fundamental to our security. So thank you for having me and talking about these issues.
Always good to see you, sir.
Thank you.